Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
I can't create a site that would celebrate views contrary to my beliefs. But like all artists, there are some messages that I can't pour my heart, my imagination, and my talents into creating because they violate my core convictions.
As a web designer, she has decided to open up a business that's open to the Colorado public. And so any business open to the public offers goods or services to any Coloradan.
That's Colorado website and graphic designer Lori Smith and Gillian Ford of the LGBTQ advocacy group One Colorado. The Washington Post tells the story. Supreme Court will hear another clash pitting religious rights against laws protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination. The Supreme Court on Tuesday said it would decide whether a Colorado designer can tell same-sex couples that she will not create a website for their weddings. At issue is the same Colorado anti-discrimination law that came before the court in 2018 when the justices ruled for baker Jack Phillips, who refused to create a wedding cake for a gay couple. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of a forthcoming Supreme Court hearing regarding Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us for part four of our series on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. Then we'll talk about the first century pastor and martyr Polycarp of Smyrna, remembered by the church on this day. Dr. James Buescher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. Joining us to discuss media coverage of a forthcoming Supreme Court hearing regarding Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act, Terry Mattingly. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center for Southern Journalism and Politics at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Here we go again, or is there something different this time around?
Well, it's like the court really wants to drag out the religious liberty implications of this case. To me, the most fascinating aspect of this case, and there are quite a few things different, just to get to the point and answer your question head on, there's quite a bit different this time around. But surely, one of the most fascinating questions concerning this particular case is, at what point did someone, and I assume that's within the Supreme Court, at what point did someone make the decision, this will only deal with the free speech side of the First Amendment? We are not. They explicitly took the religious liberty, the freedom of practice of faith, they took that off the table. The question is, who is they? Who did that? And how did we end up with a First Amendment free speech case instead of a First Amendment case that involves both sides of the First Amendment, the freedom of speech side and also the religious liberty side? So that's a mystery. I haven't seen any reporting yet that speculates on that, but Chief Justice Roberts is kind of famous at this point for wanting to find ways to issue rulings that are as narrow as possible. It's also possible that he's trying to avoid a head-on collision with some previous Supreme Court decisions about religious liberty, and he doesn't think he needs to go there yet, and that other people on the court want to talk about religious liberty, but, you know, the Chief Justice has a lot of power in terms of how cases are debated, and then in the end, who gets to write the majority opinion is a key. Roberts loves to assign the majority decision to someone he thinks will write the narrow version, or he'll take it himself. So that's a big first thing that's different about this time around. Something else that's quite different about this one is that the person that this case focuses on has opened up a business that focuses only on the creation of websites for weddings. And if you were on the left, you would certainly say at this point, this looks like this woman created the business expressly to collide with the Colorado rule. Now, the left gets accused of doing things like that all the time, trying to create a case or pick a case. In this case, it would certainly seem that someone on the conservative side of the fence has done that. And, I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, this, for example, let's differentiate this from the Colorado cake shop case. You've got a shop there that makes handmade, creative, content-full or intense wedding cakes. But that isn't all that the shop does. You and I have discussed before the fact that Mr. Phillips, in that case, he denied a customer, a gay couple, he denied their request that he create a cake expressly for them containing images and messages that they wanted to celebrate their gay union. However, even though the press didn't cover this very often or include it very often, if you read the actual materials surrounding the case, Phillips offered to sell them any other cake that was already in the shop, offered to sell them brownies, cookies, whatever, do whatever you want with these other materials in terms of holding your wedding and holding your reception. What I don't want to do is be forced to create intellectual, artistic content that violates my beliefs. I don't want to be forced to say something that I don't believe. Now, in this case, we're expressly going after that First Amendment issue. Can the state compel artistic expression or speech? And since in this case we're dealing with someone whose business only creates wedding websites, there's no way around the fact that you're going to collide with the Colorado rule pretty much no matter what you do. She can't offer to create them some other kind of website. She can't offer to do this, that, or the other. She only does wedding websites. She has set up a business that in its very creation and framing is an expression of her religious perspective on marriage. So how you get around the religious freedom aspect of that, I don't know, but it is true to say that compelling speech, compelling someone to create something that they say violates their First Amendment rights, that's a compelled speech case, and free speech is going to come up. And maybe that the court will pull off deciding it strictly on that side. It is interesting to note that Colorado says that no one's asking her to create any particular speech, because basically they're asking the question, is a website in and of itself as a form of technology? Is the website just a box in which you put speech? Or is the website itself a form of speech? It appears they're going to argue that all she has to do is create the website, and then the people who are paying her to do the website, they will put all the content in. They will do the photos. They will write the headlines. She's just creating the form, the hanger on which you're going to hang the wedding clothing, so to speak. So that'll be another aspect that's totally new in this case as well.
What did you make of the news coverage of this case? It got New York Times, USA Today, Associated Press, and I mentioned the Washington Post, which I must commend did not put scare quotes around religious rights in their headline, which they are often want to do.
The Washington Post story, to me, is pretty good. It kind of is very careful with its wording. But once again, they note that religion is really the key here. And so thus they have to very quickly, and I praise them for doing that. They got it in the third paragraph that this is a religion case, but it's not a religion case, according to the court. What it says right up top is, we'll decide whether a Colorado designer can tell same-sex couples she will not create a website for their weddings, reviving the issue of where to draw the line between someone's religious beliefs and protection against discrimination for LGBTQ people. It's a good way of stating it. And then by the third paragraph, it immediately states, very clear, the court restricted the new case to whether applying Colorado's law to compel an artist to speak or stay silent violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. And when you're reading a story on this, that's one of the key things you have to pay attention to right up front. If you also want to see how this will be framed by the Alliance Defending Freedom, the legal think tank that's representing this website designer, there's a strong quote here, and it's pretty high up in the story as well. Quote, Colorado has weaponed its law to silence speech it disagrees with, to compel speech it approves of, and to punish anyone who dares to dissent. The key phrase in that is to compel speech it approves of. Can you force a business to create content that the business owners believe violates their conscience? Can you compel a black t-shirt shop owner to create Donald Trump shirts or shirts that have the Confederate flag and, you know, and what the owners would consider a Confederate or racist message? Can you force people? Could you compel, this is an example I've used in my column, could you hire a gay film producer? Could you hire such a person and force them to do a documentary film about a church's website on conversion therapy or on people who say they've been healed of their same-sex gender desires? Let's put another wrinkle on there that I've used. Could you compel, say, a gay Episcopalian, someone whose church teaches, backs their beliefs on same-sex marriage, could you compel them to accept a job and produce material for a church whose view of homosexuality is different? We could go on and on with that. It's possible that that issue of compelled speech will inevitably get into religious doctrine, no matter what someone on the Supreme Court does to try to prevent that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of a forthcoming Supreme Court hearing regarding Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act. When we return, some more of the coverage of this case. You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Moeller, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Whedon at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house. A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Christmas, Easter, confirmation, ordination, marriage, new baby, baptism and birthday, Valentine's, housewarmings, celebrations, graduation, any occasion, no occasion, on vacation or consolation. Ad Crucem has all your gift-giving covered. Gifts for yourself, gifts for your spouse, gifts for your godchild or your pastor. Buy from us and avert a disaster. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of a forthcoming Supreme Court hearing regarding Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act. Terry Mattingly is our guest of Get Religion. Folks, we started promoting the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference just last week, and we already have more than 100 paid registrants. Attendance is limited to 500. This year's conference features Dr. Albert Moeller, Pastor Chris Roseborough, Bill Barr, Dr. Pavi Rasanen, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, Dr. Joel Bierman, and Pastor Will Whedon. Making the Case is Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. For more information, give us a call, 618-223-8385, or visit issuesetc.org. Terry, what about the other news coverage? You commended the Washington Post for pretty fair-handed coverage. Anything else to note in the other major outlets?
Yeah, there's some interesting things to look at. As often is the case, USA Today had language in it that kind of got my journalism hackles up a bit, in the sense that in USA Today's report, right up top in the second sentence, you have the following: ever since the nation's highest court handed down a landmark ruling in 2015 legalizing same-sex marriage, now listen carefully, the justices have been confronted with a barrage of lawsuits involving wedding photographers, bakers, and other matrimonial businesses that claim serving same-sex couples would violate their constitutional rights. Now, the serving same-sex couples thing, once again, avoids the very issue that in this case the court has said they want to take on, which is the compelled speech. In other words, you have photographers that have offered to be able to, I mean, they're not turning away gay customers. They're turning away shooting specifically a wedding. Florists have, in several cases, they have not turned away gay customers. They have said, we'll be willing to produce whatever flowers you want for reception, for whatever, but we won't do flowers that are used in the actual wedding ceremony. And so you get into this issue once again of specific material related to what is, in fact, at least in the views of these artists, a religious service. And there's no way around that. And that puts us into territory where some of the things that have the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, you know, has addressed point blank. I thought it was also interesting that in a New York Times story about the case, another story that's pretty good, there's some interesting material down at the bottom. Once again, you're trying to avoid the religious freedom aspect of this story. And one of the things in RFRA, one of the primary arguments you make is, do these consumers, do these LGBTQ consumers have any other options? In other words, is this the only person in town who can provide this service to them to create this website? And as I believe it was Andrew Sullivan who's credited with saying, surely there are a couple of gay florists in the Seattle area. You know, I could throw a dart at the Yellow Pages and hit a gay florist. So in this case, the New York Times specifically quotes one of the judges that wanted this decision decided in favor of Colorado, one of the lower court justices, expressly says, to be sure, LGBT consumers may be able to obtain wedding website design services from other businesses. Yet LGBT consumers will never be able to obtain wedding-related services of the same quality and nature as those that appellants offer. Close quote. Isn't that rather fascinating? I think this woman just created this business. I mean, and already the court is saying you can't get her quality of work anywhere else in Colorado, which is an area with a lot of high tech in it. That seems to be that the justice at the court before the Supreme Court was trying to address the RFRA argument, even though everybody's doing everything they can to not talk about this in terms of religious freedom. Meanwhile, the other side, a judge that was ruling against Colorado in that same decision, the Minority Report, quoted George Orwell and said the majority takes the remarkable and novel stance the government may force Ms. Smith to produce messages that violate her conscience. And there you have the exact question that they'll be arguing about at the Supreme Court.
So you had mentioned RFRA, and obviously there are shadows of RFRA in that. Did the major media coverage actually mention the thing?
No, not at all. And once again, that fits patterns that you and I have been lamenting for years. It's like no one wants to talk about the fact that RFRA has already addressed some of these issues. For example, it would be good to know something about this website designer's personal religion. In other words, what church does she go to? What is she an Orthodox Jew? What is the exact, actually it says her Christian convictions. So what do we know about her church? Because one of the things RFRA asks is a person a part of a religious tradition that has a long standing set of beliefs on what constitutes marriage? Or is this kind of a new doctrine that just kind of popped into view in a case where it having a religious conviction might get you off the hook? Or is this long-standing religious doctrine, 2,000 years or so? Now, I wasn't surprised that nobody mentioned RFRA in this. I guarantee you, though, it will come up later, and specifically if you end up with a majority decision and it's written, say, by the Chief Justice, and then you see minority decisions that attempt to apply this decision to religious freedom issues. And we should never forget when we're listening to this, we should never forget the words of Justice Anthony Kennedy way back in 2015 in his decision about gay marriage, in which he effectively punted that question years ahead into the future to some future court. In a column about that, I wrote, Justice Anthony Kennedy noted, quote, the Constitution can and in some cases must protect, unquote, gay couples in, quote, the exercise of their civil rights. Okay, that's one side of the equation. However, Kennedy then turned around and said that religious objections to gay marriage and protected views and in some instances protected form of expression must be honored. You have to kind of laugh at that point because he then added, quote, the outcome of cases like this and other circumstances must await further elaboration in the courts. Punt. So there we are. I'm not going to decide the religious liberty side of this right now, but you know, someday the court's going to have to settle this collision between the doctrines of the sexual revolution and the First Amendment and the religious liberty part of the First Amendment. What we seem to have in this case is the court saying, yeah, someday it's going to be really good that somebody decide that, but no, not today, not us. Really interesting side of this case. Once again, we could say that Anthony Kennedy's football has been punted once again.
Sounds like you're generally pleased from a journalistic standpoint with the coverage this is getting so far. It's early in the game, of course. It's just been announced, but it sounds like you're generally pleased with the initial reporting.
Well, I am in some cases. The USA Today story is not particularly good. The AP story, which is what most Americans are going to read, isn't bad. Like I said, the Washington Post story is actually pretty good. There's some interesting stuff in the New York Times. But overarching is this big question. Why? Who made the decision to limit this to the free speech clause alone? And why did they do that? Who made the decision to punt once again? At some point, we're going to have to see coverage that asks that question.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center for Southern Journalism and Politics at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us. He is author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. We continue a conversation with him on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt is the author of our Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Faith Misused at issuesetc.org. Find out how faith is an exclusively Christian word and how Christians can reclaim it in Faith Misused, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry. lcms.org/deaconess.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you know a child with autism, dyslexia, ADHD, or Down syndrome? Do you have a student who needs an effective yet more gently paced education? We invite you to visit simplyclassical.com for a complete academic curriculum rooted in the truth of God's Word, the mercy of forgiveness, and the peace of Christ. From Memoria Press, simplyclassical.com, promo code LPR22.
Every word of Scripture is really just unpacking how the cross of Christ makes everything so different.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Because Christ died for you, you are forgiven.